Welcome to a special episode of Crit Like a Girl. This week, we are releasing another episode of our mini-series, Women's Voices in TTRPG. One of the missions of our group as a whole is to make a welcoming space for everybody, no matter race, gender, sexual orientation, or background. As a first real step towards this goal, we chose to spotlight some amazing female creators on Twitter during Women's History Month. To further expand on that, we decided to share the experiences and advice of other female players and DMs in the community. So, without further ado, here is our next interview.
If you would like to introduce yourself, name, pronouns, what it is you do.
Absolutely. So my name is M. Carlson. I use she, her, hers pronouns. I'm a registered clinical counselor who specializes in working with both high-risk adolescents and also using therapeutically applied tabletop role-playing games like D&D in my practice. Yeah, so that's me.
That's incredible. How did you get into TTRPGs in the first place?
Oh man, so I discovered TTRPGs. My dad used to play D&D when I was very young, and I know he had played a lot in his youth, but I never really dove in until I actually started grad school to become a therapist, and was brought in when a friend was DMing and asked if I wanted to play, which was amazing, and fell headfirst in to just amazing world building and my love of character creation and my desire to tell rich stories with other people. And then when I finished grad school, I was like, well, there has to be a way to marry therapy, which I love to do and is my career, and also my love of tabletop role-playing games. So I went out there and I found it and went through some training, and now I use it in my practice.
That's incredible. How long ago was that, if you don't mind me asking?
I started getting involved in TTRPGs as a player would have been in 2016, and then started doing therapy with it in 2019.
Okay. Obviously, I'm assuming in your practice you function in a DM role. Do you play outside of that?
I do, yeah. So when I run games for clients, I am a therapeutic DM. So that means I have clients who come in with specific goals or targets that they're working on, and I act as both the therapist and the DM to craft a session for them. And then we do a bit of a debrief afterwards to talk about the session, talk about their characters and themselves, anything that's going on for them during the game. But I am the creative director and a cast member over at Blackwater D&D. We're a Twitch stream, and we stream Wednesdays and Saturdays, where I both, I'm also a DM there as well. So I do a bunch of things for Blackwater, and we've been doing that for the last 2 years, basically right when the pandemic started, we started streaming.
Sounds like you do a lot in a lot of different spaces. Could you explain how the therapeutic one would work without obviously using a specific example?
Absolutely. And I can speak in generalities too, or yes, potentially talk about some more typical presentations, or if there was, you know, a case example that I can talk about, obviously, without breaking confidentiality. Yes. So a therapeutic campaign would start with the clients coming in wanting to seek a TTRPG setting as a vehicle for group therapy. So I work primarily with adolescents. So sometimes their parents want them to be there. Sometimes they want to be there. Sometimes it's a mixture of both. And I also have just started sign on with Project Odyssey out of the States to work with veterans as well. So I have some experience working with veterans in other contexts, but thought that doing, you know, therapeutic D&D with veterans would be an awesome avenue for my practice as well. So we create characters together one-on-one with the clients, and you really like work with the client to craft a character that they feel really comfortable playing at the table. If they're brand new to D&D, we would, you know, talk about a little bit about mechanics. I would give them some insight into how gameplay is going to go to really kind of dissuade a lot of that nervousness that they might have before they come to the table. And then we dive right in with an adventure, something to really get the group gelling together. Each, you know, campaigns can run anywhere from like 8 to 12 sessions. And, you know, every session is about 2 hours, with the first hour and a half being gameplay and the last 30 minutes being a debrief. So during the debrief, what we're doing is we're having the clients dive deep into what happened during that session. So say there wasn't a combat that went really poorly. Maybe we would talk, you know, as a group about what was going on in that session, or what was happening in the combat, what choices were made, why did they think it went poorly, what could they have done different, what would they have liked to have done different. We would also potentially, during the actual gameplay itself, I would be crafting encounters, both either social encounters or combat encounters, that would be hopefully targeting some of the goals that these individual clients have, whether they're group goals or the ones of those specific players. So I can use an example here. Say, for instance, I have someone who's come into the campaign who has a really hard time engaging socially. They're you know, quite anxious. They have a hard time making friends, find themselves tripping over their words all the time. It makes them really uncomfortable. What I would hopefully be able to do in those situations is set up social encounters potentially where they would have, you know, success talking to a shopkeeper or a bartender to get information, or maybe they're trying to, you know, persuade the guard that they didn't do the thing they did and they have to get off scot-free. And so by engaging in those encounters, and regardless of how they turn out, the player and the client is learning and making steps towards those skills that they're trying so hard to ascertain. It could be another example. I use this one a lot when I talk about things, is to say you have someone who comes in who has a really hard time with managing frustration or patience, or what we would call distress tolerance. Things get really, really difficult and they might get really activated. And they play a barbarian who constantly kicks down the door anytime they're mad. What amazing growth it is to see in that player, to have that player make the active decision that when they, you know, something happens to their barbarian and they don't kick down the door, they talk to the other people instead. So we're trying to create situations where there could be growth, and honoring the instances that these players and these clients encounter that allow them that modicum of success to try out these new skills, to feel like they're making progress, and to do that with people who are supporting them in a party. So yeah, that's a bit of the ethos behind it.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, that's an incredible way to use TTRPGs. I think there's a running joke in some of my other friend groups that playing D&D is therapy, but seeing it used for actual therapy that's incredible. It's very cool that you've been able to put it to use that way.
And I would actually partially agree with you. D&D, I would say that a lot of D&D and TTRPGs are therapeutic, with like a lowercase t. So we as humans love to be social and collaborate with story. All human beings love story. You know, I think of my generation raised on Disney movies. We love, you know, that fantasy escapism of learning about the, you know, kings and queens, princes and princesses going on adventures, you know, slaying the dragon, befriending the dragon, all of those kind of things. So to be able to step out of our lives for a moment and engage in this beautiful world of play, which we as adults don't get to do very often, and even the young people that I often work with, they've lost the ability to play, or have moments of play taken away out of their lives based on circumstance. So to give folks a safe arena to engage in play is an invaluable experience. And that can feel so good, to know that play is available for you with people who care about you and will miss you if you're not there. So I think that lends a lot of value to why it's now being used as a like capital T therapy tool.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. Do you find the way you use D&D in therapy has affected your play style in other realms, such as like on the stream you do, or just, I don't know if you have any games that you play just for fun that are not streamed, but
absolutely it changes things. Currently right now I am not playing in any unstreamed games. I am DMing two mini campaigns and then playing in an ongoing main campaign, which we've been streaming for 2 years but playing in for the last four. So I've had 4 years with the character that I currently play, and I find that because of my lens with, you know, understanding how a therapeutic TTRPG group works, as well as my training as a therapist, I'm very aware of group dynamics. I am keenly appraised of what is going on at our table and the energy of it. And I think it's been a really amazing experience to be able to, you know, share insights and collaborate with my fellow table mates to encourage our table to be, you know, safe, grounded, vulnerable, and engaged, to allow us to play the style of D&D that we want to play, which is a really narrative forward, roleplay heavy, emotionally vulnerable D&D. And all of those things I think I carry over. I would say it's a bi-directional relationship. The way that I do therapy influences how I am as a player at a social table, and how I play socially also affects how I play or engage at a therapeutic table.
Yeah, that makes sense. You said you're very aware of like group dynamics. Do you mind if I ask, what is the usual gender makeup of the table you play at?
Yeah, the current table that I play at, we have our DM is mask, our IM femme, we have one non-binary person at our table, and we have three other mask folks at our table. So I try to, with whatever table I'm at, you know, you want to make sure that everybody feels quite safe. And I have DM'd for all femme parties, I have DM'd for lots of folks across different gender of the different aspects of the gender spectrum, and you want to make sure that, regardless of who sits at your table, that they feel that the table is going to be supportive of them, and that there isn't going to be, you know, any sort of repercussion or danger for them based on who they are coming in, or, and for the matter of fact, you know, who their character is. Also, because who you play or who you are as a person may not be the same as the character that you play. So wanting to make sure that that is a hallmark of all the tables that I'm at. So we include safety tools in both our social and definitely in our therapeutic, in my therapeutic games, and wanting to really value, honor, and champion people, regardless of identity.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm curious, and the answer might 100% be no. Have you noticed any significant difference between, you said you've played for all femme tables, you've played for definitely mixed tables. Mm-hmm. Is there a noticeable difference when you take into account gender makeup of tables and how play styles are affected?
I think so, yeah. I think it really depends on the group itself and what the energy of the group is like, especially if the group is meeting, say, for the first time for a one-shot, or have these people been playing together for a very long time, like the social game that we play, or I mean the social game, the streamed game that we play at Blackwater. My husband is the DM, and these people that I play with are my best friends, and we were friends before we started playing together, and playing together has only deepened and solidified our friendship. These people have been with me through the highs and lows of so many aspects of my life over the last 4 years. But I think there is something that I have noticed as well, is when you have, like for me, I've DM'd some amazing all-femme tables, and there is such a playfulness that comes out when it is like, when there is, you know, space for it to be simply just a femme table, which has been fantastic and so fun. And I think that, you know, as we see more femme and non-binary and, you know, our trans siblings come into the TTRPG space, there needs to be space for people who have not had access to a lot of these tables in the past. And the culture of the TTRPG scene is changing, and the tables need to change right along with it. I've been at a table or two that definitely, not when I've been DMing, but as a player, that I was quite uncomfortable with as a femme presenting person. And so it was a matter of just leaving that table or not being involved with those people anymore. But something that we at Blackwater, and as a therapist myself, try really hard to do, is that the world that we live in is diverse and beautiful, and so thus too must be the tables that we play at. Our tables must be diverse, and so should the worlds that we play in. The worlds that we play in should be diverse as well, because, you know, humanity has so many different wonderful aspects in it that need to be celebrated. But yeah, I guess there can be a different energy for sure between different table makeups. I feel fortunate to have only had one or two negative experiences, and I don't think I will, based on the way that I'm engaging with the TTRPG sphere now, I don't think that there will be too many more in the future that I'll have to contend with.
I mean, I'm very sorry you've had those experiences, but I'm glad and hope also that you do not have any more of them. I know those can be discouraging, especially when you are newer to TTRPG spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually leads into, I think you might be uniquely positioned to answer this question, in what advice would you give to people, especially women or non-binary or trans folks, or people who do not fit the until recently stereotypical view, like vision of a quote unquote D&D player? What advice would you give for people like that who are trying to join the TTRPG space?
That there is a table for you out there, and there is a DM that will make you feel like the character you are bringing to the table is just so wonderful. It might be harder to find than you like or anticipate, but they are out there. I'm firmly of the belief that TTRPGs and, you know, D&D especially, can be for everyone. And, you know, not everyone will fit at one table or the other. And if a situation arises that makes you uncomfortable at a table you're at, you can leave. You don't have to say, simply because you think you might not find another table, there are better tables out there. There are so many wonderful communities that are popping up. You know, especially during the pandemic, something that has happened is that a lot of D&D has had to switch online, which has opened up the way that people play D&D and TTRPGs. No longer do you have to sit in a living room or at your favorite local game store where you might not be comfortable, or, you know, have to go meet a bunch of new people at somebody's house who you don't really know. You can find people online in, you know, LGBTQIA2S+ communities, you know, or, you know, if you want to only play with specific, you know, folks who understand or are from different backgrounds or identities, you can find those people. It's just about knowing where to look. So my advice probably would be is to keep searching. There is a table for you, and when you find it, it's going to feel so good.
Yeah, I think that's incredible advice. I'd like to wrap back around to something you mentioned just now, and that you said earlier. You said when you were talking about having, outside of therapy even, but in Blackwater and everything else, having specific tools that you use to make sure the space is comfortable for everyone. Can you kind of expound on what kind of tools you use for that?
Absolutely. So I just want to make sure I am their names right. So at our table, we employ the TTRPG Safety Toolkit, which is written by Kiana Shaw and Lauren Bryant Monk. And primarily the tools that we use in there are consistent check-ins and open communication. So before, during a break, and then at the end, we as a cast check in with each other, how we're doing, how we're feeling about the game. Is anyone feeling uncomfortable? Anything that occurred in the game that we need to talk about before we, you know, part ways for the evening, just to make sure everyone is feeling safe. Additionally, we use lines and veils. So if there is content in the game that you don't want to see in the game, or that might be triggering for you, that is openly communicated to our DM, who make sure that that content just isn't in there. Or if it's a veiled content, then it is, you know, briefly touched on and then moved. We also employ that if there anything comes up for a person that they may not have known have been triggering for them, all they need to do is, because we're playing over Zoom at the moment, is to quickly message our DM, Tim, and then he will shift topics immediately and then make sure we check in afterwards, which is almost like the X card tool that a lot of tables use as well. I incorporate all of these tools into my therapeutic games additionally. And then something else we do off the top for me, which is a tool that I often engage with clients in therapy, is a grounding. So basically, you know, regardless of what's happened with our day, this like 5-minute grounding activity brings us all into the same space together. We incorporate a little bit of breathing techniques, like using diaphragmatic breathing. We also use some light stretching. We all set intentions for the session, be that like intentions for ourselves or intentions for our characters. And then, you know, once that is over, we all kind of feel collectively engaged and ready to play together. So those would be some of the tools that I would recommend for tables. They're very easily Googleable, and I would suggest that like regardless of whether you're starting a brand new campaign, especially incorporating these into your session zero is super, super important. Or whether you're in a game already, having, you know, employing these tools and taking time to deliberately and purposefully check in as a table is super helpful, and it will increase your immersion. It will increase your player investment and decrease chances of burnout because people aren't feeling like they have to deal with things that might be too difficult for them emotionally to touch on.
Yeah, I think that's great. Hope didn't have too many more questions, but I do want to end with a two-part question.
Yeah.
Which is, what has been, in your experience, one of your favorite experiences with TTRPGs, both in the community outside of a game, as well as in a game in character, or as DM?
Okay. So one of my favorite experiences, you know, out of a game session would be, I had the opportunity to chat with Alan Codicio, who is the creator of the Wagadu Chronicles, which is a Afrocentric D&D setting, and to hear about his, you know, a journey as a Black man, also as a queer Black man, and, you know, his entry into the TTRPG scene and creating this beautiful, beautiful campaign setting that is compatible with 5th edition. I got a chance to play in a one-shot that he ran on the Blackwater Channel with like TJ Storm, B. Dave Walters, Alicia Marie, and our dear friend Brianna DeCoster, which was one of the best experiences that I've ever had. It was so fun, and just to have something so personal, you know, for Alan shared with the community was just amazing. It makes me well up just thinking about it. Streaming online has afforded us, you know, at Blackwater a lot of opportunity to connect with people that we never would have before. So it's been an amazing ride to meet a whole bunch of people from all over, you know, from Europe as well as, you know, across North America too. Okay, and then it's just very cool. an in character moment that was really amazing. There's been so many. I play a tiefling grave cleric named Nepenthe Lightkeeper, and she is a party mom, and you know, she started this campaign very set in her ways, but she's gone through so much growth, you know, understanding that the world exists in gray, and she's fiercely protective of her friends. And there was one moment really early on in our streamed game, I think it was episode maybe 10, where we were in a huge boss battle, a culmination of this prophecy that Nepenthe had been given by her goddess, you know, to go out and stop this lich who was, you know, going to bring Thara's Dune back from the abyss. And she had to push Thara's Dune, you know, who was trying to break his way out of the abyss, back into the rift and seal it. And there was so many things going on in the battle that she knew that she had to step into the rift and stepped into the abyss and close it and bind him, you know, Thara's Dune in the abyss from that side. So she had, my cleric had just gotten married like 2 weeks before in our game. So she said goodbye to her husband at the edge of the rift, and she stepped in, and using like all the power of her god, locked and chained Thara's Dune down into the abyss. And then the rift started closing behind her. And in a flash of brilliance, our wizard used Bigby's hand to essentially like shove Nepenthe back through the rift, catching her as she fell back. So getting, you know, essentially kind of backhanded out of the abyss is a pretty defining moment for Nepi.
That is incredible. And thank you for sharing that. I love hearing people's stories about D&D and the moments that are most impactful to them. I think it says a lot about a person and the games and characters they play. If there's anything that you would like to plug or share, please do. Where can people find you?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so appreciative. So my name is M. Carlson. I am the creative director of Blackwater D&D. We're live almost every Wednesday and every Saturday night for our main campaign at twitch.tv/BlackwaterD&D. I DM two of our mini campaigns, and then you'll see me as Nepenthe the Lightkeeper in our main campaign. I am also at M_Carlson on Twitter, where you can find me talking about therapy of all sorts and D&D of all things. And yeah, this has been an absolute blast, and thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming and talking. It's been amazing talking to you, and it's been a really cool learning experience for me, so I really appreciate it, and I hope that we get to speak again in future.
Yes, thank you so much, Stars.
Thanks for listening to Crit Like a Girl. Cover art by Chester Cat. Opening and closing music by Brian Dockery. Background music from Freesound, Incompetech, and Tabletop Audio. Follow us on Twitter at Crit Like a Girl. That's girl without the I. Don't forget to check out our Ko-Fi, where you can support the show and your favorite adventurers. If you have any questions, suggestions, or recommendations, email us at critlikeagirlpod@gmail.com.